we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Songwriter Leon Russell got it right. We tried to talk it over, but the words got in the way. I'm Dr. Marilyn Singleton, and welcome to this episode of America Out Loud Pulse, a beat ahead. Have you ever found the perfect word for what you wanted to say? In college, for me, it was Weltanschauung. Now there's a Russian word, Lysenkoism, and a Greek word, parisia. They've taken on new meaning and new significance in today's world where 1984 and Fahrenheit 451 don't seem like fiction anymore. Words, 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 and words. What do they mean? Is it worth listening to people's words? In my view, everything is worth a listen. Even things that go in one ear and out the other pass through the brain, leave a little bit behind. But the more we listen, the more we learn, and the better informed we are on how to act in our lives. So this whole censorship thing, it's so clear that censorship is just a tool of tyrants and cowards. And it's been a popular tool. Remember poor old Socrates back in 399 BC? He was forced to drink poison for his crime of corrupting the youth of Rome. I mean, we like to call it teaching and the exchange of ideas. Socrates practiced parrhesia. This term goes back to where Plato quoted Socrates saying, Socrates said, "The cause of my unpopularity was my parrhesia, my fearless speech, my frank speech, my plain speech, my unintimidated speech." So we'll get back to this whole idea of parrhesia. And keep in mind, everything you hear on this channel and from some of the folks who work on this channel, think of that word parrhesia. Let's think back to censorship and how truly evil it was, and it certainly didn't help science out. Remember Galileo? Now, he was the big champion. He followed Copernicus, who said that the Earth rotated around the sun and that the universe was centered around the sun. He had such opposition from the Catholic Church and even some astronomers. It was investigated with the Roman Inquisition back in the 1600s, and they concluded that, quote, heliocentrism, that's the sun being the center, was foolish, absurd, and heretical since it contradicted Holy Scripture. Galileo was found vehemently suspected of heresy, and he had to curse and detest his opinions. He was put on house arrest. Fortunately, he wasn't found to be a heretic as such. Otherwise, he would have been in prison forever. He was on house arrest for the rest of his life, all because he followed the science. Then let's think about a different kind of censorship. I was thinking about Mark Twain's Huckleberry Finn. Remember, that was published back in 1884. And in the 1900s, libraries tossed it. They said that Huck Finn was a bad boy and he was a bad example for youth. He was the son of a drunk and he smoked and he stole, but he had a good heart. I mean, he was an innocent guy, and somehow he always figured out the right thing to do. And he helped the slave Jim escape from slavery. So, you know, in the end, Huck Finn is really a good person, but oh no, they wanted to ban this book. I mean, these days they put poor old Huck on ADHD meds. The thing that's interesting these days, it's okay that Huck is sort of a bad boy, but it's not okay that he uses the so-called N-word to describe his friend Jim, who, of course, he helped escape from slavery. And it's decided that that's offensive and racist. The book is a piece of history. It's telling the times. It's telling the tale of a poor boy and growing up in the South. But oh no, they're just going to ruin a good piece of literature because somehow these grand poobahs decide that they're helping and that they're doing some sort of good. But guess what? This is how it begins. Then, of course, there's the tyrants who don't even pretend to be doing good. They just want to control the narrative. Look at how Charles Darwin's Origin of the Species was censored from his own Trinity College. Now, it doesn't matter if you are creationist, evolutionist, however you want to pull that science of mankind together. The point is, we should be able to hear about it all and make a decision for ourselves. One particularly bad example of censorship was back in 1842 in Paris. This is disgusting. The director of the Paris School for the Blind ordered Braille books to be burned because he didn't want the blind to be able to read on their own, and then they might be able to think for themselves. This, frankly, reminds me of what goes on now in certain minority neighborhoods where it's so encouraged to have everybody keep on speaking whatever their native language was and only reading their native language newspaper. And of course, there's a reason for that. Some people do not want foreigners to learn English because if they could learn English and read other newspapers, they might get an alternate point of view. This is planned when you go in a Mexican neighborhood and all you see are these La Raza papers and whatnot, only in Spanish, no English-speaking papers. That is on purpose. So that's its own kind of censorship. And then, of course, you know, we're all used to the idea of the commies and the Bolsheviks banning books that didn't feed into the beliefs of communism. They banned religious books, economic books, even fiction. And then, of course, we all know about the Nazis in 1933, where they cleansed the literature. And they actually had people go out in the streets and celebrate with these big bonfires. And certain authors like Ernest Hemingway and Jack London, Helen Keller, of all people, Freud, they had their works thrown into the fires. They didn't like what they had to say. And Stalin did the same thing. He wanted to abolish Jewish culture. So he had all the Jewish books burned in the 30s and 40s. You know, when people celebrate this, and even now some people are celebrating some of the censorship, they forget what one of the leaders of the ACLU said years ago. And he was channeling the philosopher Jeremy Bentham. The first target of censorship is rarely the last. But somehow they just forget when it's their disfavored speech is censored. It's like, well, it's okay. So that brings us around to, since we're a medical show of sorts, the Federation of State Medical Boards. This is a private group that decided doctors should somehow be punished for spreading medical misinformation and disinformation. Don't you just love those words? They are right out of novels or The Invasion of the Body Snatchers or some of these movies that we just thought would never come true. The president of SFMB had said in an interview, quote, More than 2 years into this pandemic, the largest threat next to the spread of the virus itself is the spread of disinformation and misinformation. He noted that truthful and accurate information is central to the provision of quality medical care. Well, I'd kind of like to know is what happened to the notion that when in the beginning, who put out World Health Organization put out that COVID was not airborne. Now that's all we read about is you better watch out because it just travels in the air. And some of us have been saying that from the get-go. And all that gone, deep, dark memory hole. It's as though they never said it. And remember those ads that said, get your vaccination, stop the spread. I mean, they must have been true. President Biden even said so. Well, suddenly the ads change. Well, if you get the vaccination, you won't get as sick. But of course, it was a new variant by then, and it didn't make people as sick anyway. Does anybody ever apologize? Do they ever say, oh, no, we were wrong. The science was evolving. No. And, you know, let's think about it. We know science changes. That's why we don't do bloodletting anymore. That's why we don't do radical mastectomies anymore. Things change. Things that seem like a good idea at the time are proven not to be. I don't know why. Well, actually, I do. I have my opinion. Why everybody is so stuck on keeping the COVID narrative the same, even though the science is evolving to show that all these things that were said in the beginning are just simply not true. What I wonder when you have these medical groups suddenly wanting to silence people and don't want people to give any information other than what they want to say, suddenly there's all these people putting out statements of outrage with the overturning of Roe v. Wade as a federal constitutional right to have abortion. The American College of Surgeons said, we will always advocate for the practice of evidence-based care and oppose any interference by the government or any other entity in the patient-physician relationship. So I guess that only works with abortion, but not information about COVID or other diseases, it seems. The American College of Surgeons said surgeons and physicians of all specialties must be free to practice medicine, informed by medical education, experience, scientific evidence, without fear of the care being criminalized. Physicians must not be placed at risk of persecution or prosecution for providing patient-centered care. What an interesting statement. If they weren't talking about abortion, would they have said the same thing? No, they've come out with statements condemning doctors for having alternate views about COVID-19. So yet again, censorship is fine if you don't like the message, but it's not okay if it's a message you favor. Then, of course, kind of on the side, there's kind of a social censorship that's going on. And this didn't just begin with the COVID lockdowns. I mean, the COVID lockdowns were a real bonus. When they started pummeling us with all this talk where everybody's a racist and everybody hates each other, which you know is not true. All you have to do is go out in the street and see people just kind of milling around, getting along with one another, or not paying attention to one another because they're more concerned about their lives. And of course, there's jerks at both ends of the political spectrum. But, you know, most people don't even pay attention to all the hate mongering. And it's mostly the people on the newscasters or news readers or opinion people that are spewing out all these hate. The hate, if you look at everyday people, that's just exactly what they are, everyday people. So we're going to talk about some doctors now that we see all the hypocrisy in these organizations. We'll talk about some doctors who did defy the herd. I'm going to begin with one that I don't know. All doctors may have heard of this fellow. I don't know if all people have, probably not. So he's one of my favorites. His name is Ignaz Semmelweis. He made one of the biggest discoveries in medicine, and that's hand washing. It's hard to imagine now when everybody says, wash your hands, sing happy birthday, and that whole length of time for washing your hands will get rid of the germs. It just seems like such a normal thing to do, but this fellow had an uphill climb. When we come back, we will talk about his story. I just want to thank everybody for listening to America Out Loud Pulse. We are always a beat ahead. We have free apps on Apple, Android, and Alexa, and you can hear Pulse every weekday at 5 and an encore at 10 p.m. and the next morning at 8 a.m. on iHeartRadio. You can listen on our media player anywhere in the world. The best part is all the shows go direct to podcasts in about 24 hours, and the podcasts are on the usual suspects, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeart. So make it easy. Just bookmark AmericaOutLoud.com. Now, as far as our lineup goes, on Mondays, you've got me. Tuesdays, you have concerned doctors, Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Stuart Tankersley. Wednesdays with Dr. Peter McCullough and Malcolm Out Loud. Thursdays with Dr. Peter Bregan and Ginger Ross Bregan. And Fridays with scientist Dr. James Lyons Weiler. And we have a new feature. If you have any questions for the host or one of the host guests, just send them on in and we'll make sure your question gets answered.
All right. You've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutLoud.com and save 20% by using promo code OUTLOUD.
Many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 120 times per month. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains full effective doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day, pill-free, ultra-absorption ingestible gel. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code America50 for 50% off any order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code America50 for 50% off.
Back to Ignaz Semmelweis. This is a fellow who was, this is back in the mid-1800s. He was educated at the University of Pest and Vienna, and he received his doctor's degree from Vienna and was appointed assistant at the obstetric clinic in Vienna. It's important that I tell you these certain cities. This, I don't know, this is one of these stories that lets us know that history repeats itself. So after he started at Vienna, he became involved in the problem of childbed fever. This is infection of any part of the female reproductive organs after childbirth or an abortion. And this was happening in maternity hospitals all over Europe. Now, at the time, most women delivered their babies at home, but some had to go to the hospital because they were poor or had complications. Well, the people that went to the hospital had mortality rates as high as 30%. And this was mostly from this childbed fever, puerperal infection. So some people thought the infection was because of overcrowding or bad ventilation, lactation, or miasma. I don't know if you've heard of miasma, but this was actually a common belief that that's what caused disease. And miasma is sort of a poisonous vapor or mist that's made up of particles from decomposing material. And it smelled bad. And it was assumed that this could cause disease. So these were some of the ideas for why these women were getting sick. Well, Semmelweis investigated, and his chief at Vienna actually objected. His chief just said, well, you know, this happens and some women are going to die and it's not preventable, and gave him a lot of trouble for him trying to get an investigation going. But Semmelweis noticed that the women who had their babies delivered by physicians and medical students had a 2 to 3 times higher mortality rate than women who had their babies delivered by midwives. So he came to the conclusion that the students who came directly from the dissecting room to the maternity ward carried the infection from the mothers who had died from the disease into the healthy mothers. Made sense. So he ordered the students to wash their hands in a solution of chlorinated lime before they did each exam, and that this hand washing would prevent the passing on of the illnesses. So what were the results? After he started the mandatory hand washing policy, the mortality rate for women delivered by doctors fell from 18% down to 2%, the exact same as it was for the midwives. And then when he started washing instruments, kind of hard to believe they didn't wash instruments, the mortality rate fell to just below 1%. Now, the students were totally on board. They just thought, well, the proof was in the pudding here. And guess what? His superiors in Vienna just said, eh, and they actually opposed him. So here's kind of an interesting twist in this whole thing. Politics came in the picture. I know, hard to believe. In 1848, there was a liberal political revolution that was going all over Europe, and Semmelweis had taken part in some of the events in Vienna. I wonder, were they on January 6th? Somehow I don't know that. Well, the more he did these political activities, the more obstacles that he got in his professional work. So by 1849, after a year of his political activism, he was dropped from his post at the clinic. He applied for a teaching job at the university and was turned down. Then he gave a big lecture about childbed fever, and he well-received lecture, but he tried for a teaching post and they put so many restrictions on the teaching post that it was an embarrassment and humiliating. So he just left Vienna. For the next 6 years, he went back to Pest and worked at a hospital there. And there again was a huge epidemic of childbed fever in the obstetrics department. And so he asked to be put in charge of the department. He did the same thing that he had done in Vienna, where he made people wash their hands, he washed the instruments, and right away the deaths went down to less than 1%. However, in Vienna, our old friend who couldn't support him, the rate of the childbed childbed fever deaths was 10 to 15%. Interesting, eh? So eventually he had private practice, he got married, and his ideas were accepted in Hungary. And in fact, in Hungary, they sent out a directive telling everyone to wash their hands. But in Vienna, and remember, Vienna was supposed to be, you know, the pinnacle of medicine, they were very hostile toward it. And in fact, the editor of a medical weekly wrote, quote, "It was time to stop the nonsense about the chlorine hand wash." This is so stunning to me, and I'm sure to anybody who ever washes their hands, it seems so obvious, but this is just so reminiscent of what's going on now. You know, it's called doubling down. How could these people not know, with the statistics that were available, that the hand washing worked, but they couldn't admit that they were wrong? So in 1861, this is years after he did the investigations, he published a book, I'll say it not in German, The Etiology, Concept, and Prophylaxis of Childbed Fever. And he sent it to all the prominent obstetricians and medical societies. But guess what? Not a good reaction. This was even abroad, even in the US, because the weight of authority didn't stand with his teaching. He wrote letters to professors of medicine, no effect. And he went to conferences, very famous pathologists rejected his doctrine of hand washing. Finally, all the years of controversy just undermined his spirit. And in 1865, he had a breakdown and was taken to a mental hospital. And there he died. Interestingly, he died from an infection from a cut on the hand. This doctrine, known as the Semmelweis doctrine of hand washing, is now totally accepted medical science. It's not even a question. It's not even something that we can argue that dirty hands are good for you. And indeed, when COVID came or flu season, anything comes around, what's the first thing people tell you to do? Wash your hands, keep your hands away from your face, try to keep the germs away from you. So this was the story of Ignaz Semmelweis. So he's a good one to know, because it's a story that it's difficult for people to argue that hand washing is a good thing, but he, like so many people today, were vilified for even coming up with this idea. The next one is one that I find interesting because of what I learned in school about peptic ulcers. And peptic ulcers used to be very big when I was in medical school. People were bleeding from their stomach and had emergency surgeries, and it was a very big deal. A lot of medicine was devoted to it. And it was assumed that peptic ulcers, stomach ulcers, were caused by spicy foods, stress, lifestyle problems, smoking, especially excessive alcohol intake. So even though all these people were having peptic ulcers, people noticed, well, there were a lot of people who had ulcers who didn't drink and didn't have spicy foods. So there had to be another reason. So there was an Australian pathologist named Robin Warren, and he noticed that biopsies, almost half of them from peptic ulcer patients, had a particular bacteria in the stomach. And, you know, it's kind of like, okay, fine. And so in 1981, a physician, a researcher named Barry Marshall, became interested in that. And so he started studying the patient biopsies too. And he was able to grow a culture of these bacteria that were found in the biopsies. And they named it H. pylori. Pylori, pylorus is the section of the stomach toward the end. And the H is for Heliobacter, because they were spiral-shaped bacteria. So all this, you know, in the lab, discovered, seen it under the microscope. And so almost all the patients who had stomach inflammation or gastric ulcer or duodenal ulcer had this H. pylori. So Dr. Marshall wanted to show, he wanted to use the scientific method and show that the inflammation was caused by that bacteria. And they tried to replicate the disease in an animal model. They used little pigs, but the pig stomachs didn't have any change. So they didn't even write that up. But Marshall, even though at meetings, people made fun of him and said, oh, come on, blah, 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 the usual, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. He was convinced he was right. So what he ended up doing is he carried out the experiment on himself. He drank the live H. pylori culture. He became infected with a bacterium. He got symptoms of gastric ulcer. And then he treated himself with antibiotics and the symptoms went away. So they went on to show, and then it was used on several patients, that antibiotics would cure the peptic ulcers. For their work, they won the Nobel Prize in 2005. So these are, you go to these medical meetings and people, until COVID, used to be quite open. Somebody would present a poster or a paper on something quite novel, and people's eyes were open. They'd say, wow, you know, we don't have the answer to this. Maybe you have the answer. So it doesn't seem like that's anymore. I remember way back when nobody had ever heard of endorphins. And we did a paper back in Boston measuring endorphin levels. We had to do this very complicated procedure. And one of the chemists in the lab figured out how to do it and measured levels of people who had a lot of narcotics and those who hadn't. And the people who had a lot of narcotics, their endorphin levels were very low. And because the narcotics were replacing the natural narcotic. And I remember when we presented the paper, the fellow who was judging these papers had made a comment about some papers are on the edge. And we thought, oh my goodness, he thinks it's too outrageous. And lo and behold, our paper won. That's because people in medicine, it seems like, used to be curious. And we're all curious. Scientists are curious. That's what science is all about. One of my favorites, of course, is hysteria. I remember hysteria, even when I was in medical school, was actually a term. And you've always heard the hysterical female, and that comes from hysteria, the uterus. Now, that is out of the medical lexicon, but hysteria used to be the diagnosis for everything. It didn't matter what it was, anxiety or irritability, insomnia. It didn't matter what it was, that if a female had it, it was hysteria. And this was a regular diagnosis. We cringe at the thought now, but this is the whole point. You have to have open discussion, and certainly open discussion in medicine. And we will keep on having our open discussion after we take our little break. I just want to thank everyone for listening to America Out Loud Pulse. And you know we are always a beat ahead. We've got free apps on Apple, Android, and Alexa. And you can hear Pulse every weekday at 5 with an encore at 10 p.m. and on iHeartRadio at 8 a.m. the next morning. You can listen on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. Now remember, all shows go direct to podcast in 24 hours. The episodes are on lots of networks like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeart. So do what I do, bookmark americaoutloud.com/pulse. You can find us easily. There's a new feature and we're excited about that. And that's questions. We can't really have questions live on the air, but you can send in a question if you have something for one of the hosts or one of their guests, and we'll see to it that we get back to you.
It's summertime. Ready for your vacation to the beach, the lake, or the mountains? But what about your accommodations? Ever wonder what germs were left behind by the previous guests? Kathy G. from Tulsa says the Genesis Fogger gives her peace of mind and confidence when traveling. With Genesis, she knows that the air and surfaces in her vacation rental are free of bacteria and viruses left behind by the previous occupants. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years. Brush, floss, repeat. We're told to use fluoride, which doesn't really address the acid-creating bacteria. That is where the dentist-recommended Spry Dental Defense System shines. Spry products contain xylitol, a natural sugar, which helps get rid of those nasty, smelly acid-creating bacteria in our mouth. The best way to care for your teeth and gums is by using Spry. The Spry Dental Defense System has a wide variety of products. Toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and chewing gums that are designed to work together to keep your teeth clean and mouth healthy and smelling sweet all day long. To get your oral care back on track in an easy, effective, and very tasty way, switch to Spry today. Ask your dentist about xylitol and the Spry products. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural product retailers.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. This is not a fight of Republican versus Democrat. It's not a fight of rich versus poor, old versus young, man versus woman, gay versus straight. It's not a fight of black lives, blue lives, Hispanic lives, or white lives. This is a battle of good versus evil. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
So, I'm a hysterical woman. And fortunately, we don't have that diagnosis of hysteria anymore. One thing I'd like to point out, and we saw this with poor Semmelweis and him being in politics and having it affect his livelihood, is smoking and lung cancer. Now, people kind of consider it axiomatic that smoking and lung cancer kind of go together. Obviously, everyone who smokes doesn't get lung cancer, but there's certainly a very high correlation of smokers getting lung cancer. All the way back in 1929, a German doctor published a paper that showed that lung cancer patients mostly were smokers. The thing that's interesting, the research came out right when there was all this unrest and talk of war, you know, for World War II. And so the paper was basically overlooked for years, because it was really in the late 40s that Dr. Dahl was considered the person that came up with the correlation. The thing that's interesting is, even though this smoking and lung cancer correlation came out, the tobacco industry, with its lobbyists, was right on top of things. So even in the 60s, when the Surgeon General was being coaxed to come out and say something and put things on cigarette packages, you know, all the various toxic effects, the tobacco companies had all their ads, and they were talking about how more doctors smoke this brand or that brand. And, remember Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. And they had young folks as models. And, cigarettes were supposed to do everything. I remember this from high school, that if you smoked, you could digest your food better. It would help keep your weight. And they had people smoking on TV. And so by the time the Surgeon General released his report, there was so much propaganda from the industry in the other direction that it's like nobody cared. It took years for people to finally make that connection that smoking was not good for you. And we certainly have other reasons not to smoke, more than lung cancer, heart disease, and other problems. But it just shows how politics and corporatism can change medicine. Now I'm going to pull out another word. And this is a word that we're starting to hear lately, Lysenkoism. And where this word came from was from a fellow named Trofim Lysenko. This was a Russian peasant who ultimately became a scientist. And he had this narrative of poor boy makes good in the wonderful communist system. And so one, he was a great propaganda tool. He was called the barefoot professor. And the Communist Party said, he's smarter than the university people. Well, what Lysenko did was he had these ideas about plant breeding. And mind you, people were starving in the 30s and 40s in Russia. And he completely rejected Mendelian genetics, even though this was standard agricultural knowledge at this point. But the party liked Lysenko's ideas. So even though they were wrong, they were politically advantageous. And his detractors were silenced. In 1940s, Lysenkoism was decreed to be the only correct biological theory. And this is the sort of thing, you know, we're starting to hear this word now. Is this what seems to be going on with COVID, where there's only one theory? And the theory has to be the party line. If it changes, then it's too bad. We'll never admit that it changed. And so this is what we're going through now. And sadly, I mean, Soviets had very good scientists, but all those years, it was like 30 years that Lysenkoism was the word. And it ruined Soviet science. And of course, all the farming failures, because his ideas were so totally wrong, caused mass starvation. And that was supposedly what he was hired to cure. And then in addition, just like now, the careers of biologists were destroyed because they disagreed with the party line. And it wasn't just the scientific party line, but at some point they had equated the science to equal the Communist Party. Does that sound familiar? Who said, I am the science? Somebody named Dr. Fauci. Yes. And this isn't how it is. We know it's not how it is. So Lysenkoism. This is what we're reliving now. We thought we left that behind in the 1940s. Finally, there's a word that's become one of my favorite words now, and it's parresia, P-A-R-R-H-E-S-I-A. It's an ancient Greek word, and what it means is speaking openly and candidly. There's sort of an embodiment of this whole thing that we'll kind of go into, because I just think it's interesting. I hope you do too, that literally the word means to speak everything, to speak freely, to speak boldly. Demosthenes said, it's necessary to speak with parresia, without holding back at anything, without concealing anything. And Plato quoted Socrates as saying, the cause of my unpopularity was my parresia, my fearless speech, my frank speech, my plain speech, my unintimidated speech. So parresia is not just freedom of speech, but the obligation to speak the truth, even if it's at personal risk. And that's ends up being an important part of the definition of parresia. And back in ancient Greece, it was a fundamental component of democracy in classical Greece. The assemblies and the courts of the Athenians were free to say almost anything. And in the theater, the playwrights made full use, and they would ridicule politicians and kind of like what comedy used to be before people started getting canceled. So there were limits in other areas around town where people didn't feel completely free to discuss politics or morals or religion. But so people had to watch their tongue and pay attention to who they were with and what the context was. So the French philosopher Michel Foucault, he developed the concept, the modern day concept of parresia, as a way to talk to one another, where one speaks openly and truthfully about opinions and ideas without the use of rhetoric, manipulation, or generalization. The speaker chooses frankness instead of persuasion, truth instead of silence, risk instead of security, and moral duty instead of self-interest or apathy. So there's kind of rules for what verbal activity would be parresia. The speaker has a relationship to the truth. He admits it's his opinion, but it's a well-researched opinion. He says everything that's on his mind, doesn't hide anything, opens his heart and mind completely to other people. And he uses words simply so the audience knows exactly what he thinks. So the speaker is a critic to either himself or popular opinion or culture. And he's taking a risk. The revelation of his truth, and which again is a research truth molded with his opinion, puts him in a position of danger. And the fact that he's saying something that's different from what the majority believes is a strong indication that what he's talking about is parresia. Now, a tyrant or a king can't use parresia because they're not risking anything. They're already the one in power. And that's something to keep in mind, that parresia is something that people who don't have power create their own power by speaking the truth. And the person who uses parresia continues to speak the truth no matter what, because they feel it's a moral and social duty to help others and themselves. And in a public situation, it's obvious that the person who's using parresia has a less powerful position than the people to whom he's revealing the truth. Now, when I talk about this, does this sound like anyone you know? To me, it kind of sounds like Malcolm and lots of the crew here at America Out Loud. There are so many folks out there who are trying to speak the truth, and many folks who have lost their jobs. We personally know physicians who have, because they've spoken the truth. Our own Dr. Peter McCullough has been vilified, but he continues to speak the truth. This is so disturbing to me because I've been in medicine a long time and seen so many things change, seen IV fluids. There used to be a certain way people did IV fluids, and one way you did it in Boston, one way you did it in San Francisco. There used to be a certain way that people decided blood sugar should be regulated, and tight regulation with insulin versus non-tight regulation, and what changes it made as far as having leg amputations or going blind. All these things were openly discussed, and people had valid differences of opinion. A lot of times it turned out it made no difference whatsoever. And personally, as a woman, it's hard to even imagine way back when radical mastectomy was the treatment of choice for all breast cancers. Then suddenly we were able to move on to modified radical simple mastectomy, and then lumpectomy with some radiation and chemotherapy. And now we have all these different subtypes of breast cancer, you know, which can change what treatment. But we think back, it's like it was the Dark Ages, but it wasn't. I guess you could say I've been a doctor that long. But these were things that were being done when I was a surgery house officer. And times change, science changes. And how does it change? Open, honest discussion. Paresia in many situations. Our freedom, our medical freedom, really does depend on our ability to speak out. And we can't have the government, we can't have these medical organizations and boards and all these other folks tell us what to do. Obviously, we aren't going to do anything that hurts a patient. We know that. We practice medicine based on the oath of Hippocrates, where we will do no harm to our patients. But this includes open, honest discussion. The concept that you can shut doctors up and it's becoming acceptable is, what would be the right word? An anathema to what medicine and science and good patient care is. So I hope all these words have been of interest to learn, and of some of these doctors of interest to learn when people talk about, well, it's the science, Dr. Fauci says so. Tell them some of these stories and think about paresia when you think about America Out Loud. I just want to thank everybody for listening to America Out Loud Pulse. As Malcolm loves to say, we are always a beat ahead, and I hope we continue to be so. We've got free apps on Apple, Android, and Alexa, and we're on every weekday at 5 p.m. Eastern with an encore at 10 and on iHeartRadio at 8 a.m. the next morning. All our shows go direct to podcast in 24 hours. And the episodes are on lots of podcast network, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, Stitcher, and iHeart. So make it easy. You can find all these on americaoutloud.com. Just bookmark it. Now you've got Mondays, you have me Tuesdays with concerned doctors, Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Dr. Stuart Tankersley. Wednesday with Dr. Peter McCulloch and Malcolm Out Loud. Thursdays with Dr. Peter Bregan and Ginger Ross Bregan. Fridays with scientist Dr. James Lyons Weiler. And remember our new feature, send in questions to americaoutloud.com/pulse. So whether you agree or have other opinions, please share the show. And thank you for listening to America Out Loud Pulse. And until next week, say it loud. I'm free and I'm proud.